We did not joke about the gauntlet of waffle boxes.
Now. Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we have guest John Olson to talk about the mutual and arbitrary fiction of calendars. It sounds weird, but it's really awesome.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-host, Tim Wick.
Hi, I'm over here.
And the still sick Molly Glover.
I'm still sick because it's the same day.
Yeah, it's not
Oh my God, you just, the illusion has been shattered.
It's not like a week later and
I don't
she's
want him to think
sick.
I'm one of those weak-ass bitch babies who's sick for like 3 weeks at a time. It's just, it's like, it's only been like 20 minutes.
right. And we have a guest this week, John Olson. Is here with us, theist Yay. John Olson. Is that how we're gonna?
Yes, you could do that.
Is that? I mean, it's technically correct.
Theist John Olson.
That's not on any of my business cards.
It's not on your business. What is that?
I mean, you got to feel
business
good about
analyst.
Business analyst.
You got to feel good about theist. The fact that you're a second theist ever.
Yeah. Business theist.
Am I only the second?
I think so.
More.
No, we've had Jenna Young. And that's all.
It's not that we hate theists on the podcast. No, it just hasn't come up.
It seems weird to seek them out.
Yeah,
for a thing called Geeks Without God seems kind of weird. It's also like, you know, we have plenty of other places we can insert ourselves in the culture. So.
But thanks for inserting yourself here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got something to
fucking
plug.
Theist taking over everything. Taking over the goddamn atheist podcast.
Because that's what I'm doing.
Right. Exactly. Like anyone could take over
super,
from us. We
I already
don't give people enough time.
I already feel super disenfranchised, you guys.
And John, you're nerdy about, something you're very interested in that's, I think is super nerdy. Is calendars.
Yeah, I consider myself a calendar geek. I'm interested in the way that we organize a year, and I worked for a company that produced diversity calendars and sold them to other companies as like a tool, and also some companies were just buying it as a fig leaf to say, look, we value diversity.
And, look, there's brown people on the wall.
And some companies were using it as a training tool, like, here, we're going to start with the calendar, and we're going to launch from there. And it was all based on, it was based on one of our clients, and I don't work for this company anymore because it doesn't exist, but one of our clients, their senior vice president used to schedule mandatory sales meetings every year on the Jewish high holy days, and then would complain when none of the Jewish salespeople would show up.
What an asshole.
and he said, why am I having trouble retaining these people, and why am I having trouble with this issue? And our boss was like, well, you don't know when the year starts, and you need to figure that out. So
did anybody ever say to him, well, let me give you an example. Imagine that you scheduled this sales meeting on Christmas.
Or Easter.
I think somebody did say that to him.
Yeah.
And that kind of opened his eyes a little bit because the product took off from there. So.
Yeah.
But I'm interested in diversity calendars, but I'm also interested in science calendars because we don't have any scientifically agreed upon.
Is there a science calendar? I mean,
I don't think we do. Like, how do we organize the year in terms of
the rotation of the Earth? Is there a starting point where it's considered zero, and then like the rest of it is orbit plus one?
I don't think there is, and I'm interested to know because there have been attempts to mark time based on a starting point, like. Asimov had stories where he would mark it from the beginning of the atomic era or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
I would imagine, I mean, if I were to make a science calendar, I would imagine it would begin on either the winter or the summer solstice. To me, I would feel like we would start it on either the it's not helio apex, something like that, where we're closest to the sun or we're furthest away. That's where we would start. I feel like that would be.
But what date do you start it? Because, of course, our current calendar system starts with the birth of Christ. Actually, I think it's the year after the birth.
It's 4 years before the birth of Christ.
The point is,
it's ridiculous.
It's arbitrary, you know.
doesn't matter. It's the common era now. It's not after death.
But the common era still starts.
Yes.
Theoretically.
Based on
some date that Jesus was maybe born.
And there were even arguments about that, because there's the Gregorian and the Julian calendars, which like tried to correct certain mathematical errors that were made in making that estimate. And it's like
political.
It's compromise all the way down.
But with the Jesus thing, here's interesting. So there's 6 days after Jesus's birth, theoretically, that would have then been technically in the year before his birth.
Yes.
So that's weird.
Yeah, it gets pretty screwed up.
It was a long, long delivery.
How does your calendar geekery love the year 2012 with the Mayan calendar and all that? Were you just involved in lots of debates?
I didn't get into any debates. I was resigning from the debating society, as we like to say, that year. But what interested me about that is that I'm also a fan of William S. Burroughs, and Burroughs is not particularly educated, but he was enough of an autodidact that he had an insight that the Mayan calendar in particular was an obsession of his. And he pointed out that all calendars are systems of control. Mm. And so the Mayan calendar was a way for Mayan elites to control their society. This is when you plant. This is when you harvest. Yeah, this is when you bring your children up to the steps and murder them or whatever.
Right,
Like, this is when you go to war. Oh, this is when you do this. And their calendar was a way of controlling their society. And he said, really, all calendars are a way of controlling society.
Well,
positive and negative. Well,
organizing.
Yeah.
Holidays. I mean, holidays originally being days that were, both festivals celebrating gods, but also because, I mean, I don't know if you've ever played a builder game like Caesar or Pharaoh. If you don't give your people holidays often enough, they will revolt and they'll stop doing their work.
Sure.
And they will, and
and
so,
then your society will crash.
Yeah, so it's like you have to, and you'll hear the people in the street in these games be like, been forever since I had a day off. And you're like, oh shit, it's been like 9 months since
we should have a solstice.
Yeah, we should celebrate fast.
Well, that's what kind of interests me too about like a scientific calendar, because some of these cultural calendars are based on observable astronomical events. You know, the Lunar New Year and the Chinese New Year at least have a passing relationship with, the cycle of the seasons. And so all these pre-modern religious calendars actually have some relationship to observable phenomena, even if their explanation for that observable phenomena is bogus or weird or that's not very culturally sensitive of me, but they're
not scientifically.
Yeah, it's not scientifically.
There's no
based.
Foundation in science, but it's foundation in observation.
Yeah, it is, and it's funny
because
it's
all we had.
That's all we had, and we could create, and there is a relationship between like, oh, the food is running out. As the harvest ends, and like there's a relationship between our physical state and the evolution of the year, so why not build a calendar around that?
Well, in the early civilizations, even back then, they recognized, it's 365 days, day defined as, noon to noon, or however you define a day. 365 days between the longest day of the year and the next longest day.
Right, they observed an amount of time.
The year itself is not entirely arbitrary, although we have to make corrections. That's what leap years are about, because it's not perfect.
Right.
Because our structure our structure of a day is not perfect.
See, we should all just switch over to POSIX time, because then we get those leap seconds.
Oh.
That's Unix time is the way to go.
If you think about it, even our modern calendars and holidays in America are related to seasonal, because the holidays where you eat the most, where the eating is part of the holiday, are all the winter holidays.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving, Christmas, even like some like New Year's-y celebrations. Some people do solstice.
I would argue that like grilling is, for most people who aren't at Convergence, a pretty
4th of July.
It's a 4th of July
but you don't,
thing.
But you don't prepare a huge meal that everyone eats until they're done.
Well,
you don't. I've never done a 4th of July.
That might be a part of some people's experience. Easter, there's a ham.
Before,
isn't that a thing?
That's a twofer for me.
I realize
it doesn't make any sense, but right now I want the title of this episode just to be, for Easter, there's a ham.
So I'm an atheist and I don't eat pork. So, that's a twofer for me. Like, I don't... Easter's doubly baffling. I don't Jesus and I don't ham, so
I don't ham.
So Easter dinner has never been a thing I've ever
written that down.
You know, I barely do either of those things either.
Yeah,
it's I think too that as we get more sophisticated with our food ways, that you'll see more of those traditions change too. Like, we'll start eating different, crazier things. Like, think of all the people who, you know, there are Jews. It's kind of a joke, but there are Jews who say, Christmas for us is Chinese food day.
Yeah.
We have Jeremy Stomberg always used to have 4-3-3's Jewish Christmas.
Yeah.
Because they didn't really do anything with their families on Christmas
Day.
They'd go watch like three or four movies in the theater.
Yeah, if you go watch a movie on Christmas, you are in a theater with a whole lot of Jews.
Yeah.
I mean, a whole lot of Jews.
That's why the media, the Jew-run Hollywood media, puts movies out on
conspiracy.
Christmas Day.
Conspiracy.
Yeah.
I don't endorse that position. I would like to distance myself from Molly's remarks.
It's so
people usually do.
So there's no measurable. there's nothing really super scientific about the calendar that, like, yes, there are cultural calendars, but like, we're just gonna go ahead and say like the Western calendar is kind of the calendar by which we all do business and operate.
It is totally by which we do business,
and so. That doesn't have much scientific founding, or it's not very accurate in a logical or like fact-based
way. No, it's not.
So is this like a metric system thing where like one day we're just going to have to fucking ditch it and convert?
I would love to see that happen because I would be interested in seeing what kind of compressed change would have to happen to make us ditch it and convert to something.
It'd be a big deal.
Yeah, I think it would be a big deal because it's not just about systems of controlling the masses. It's also a self-organizing thing, right? Like, I'm going to set the rhythms of my life around something.
Well, and weekends.
So arbitrarily, weekends. But see, the weekends, that's a perfect example of something where there was mass change because labor movements insisted that people should not have to work until they simply drop in their traces.
Right.
And then enough people got together to say...
To agree with it.
Yeah.
I think that something that it would be really hard, especially people who were older than a certain, like maybe older than 50, if we had to do something like that, because how do you get out of the habit of knowing like 10/31 is Halloween, 2/14 is Valentine's Day, you know, like 12/25 is Christmas, and just those markers of time that then you'd be like, okay, so where do we put the holidays now? Because we're not going to get rid of the holidays. So where do we put those? And
didn't you know how star dates work in Star Trek? Is that actually some?
We could find that. There is a very specific. The star dates are well defined.
They are.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There's some science behind it, or not so science, but like thought and meaning.
There was thought that went into how the star dates work, and I can't remember it.
Yeah,
now.
I don't
try and.
I had a very eye opening conversation with a friend in college, which is when you have these kind of conversations where he challenged me on like, why do people follow a day on the Enterprise? Like, why do they? And I was sticking to this position of, well, they've, you know, human beings need some kind of a natural
circadian rhythm.
And he's like, yes, but you're so far out in space, relativistic effects have taken place. You're deciding, like, they are deciding to agree on basically a fiction. Like, we're going to say that the Earth year is the year that we're organizing around. The Earth day is the length of the day that we're organizing around. And at the time, I stuck to my guns. But as I look back on that, I'm thinking, you know, that's true because what about the Vulcan day?
Yeah.
What about the
In Star Wars, in the role play books that I edit, when we do planetary, they'll do a planet like summary page that kind of tells you like all the details you need to know about any given planet. And they always will say like what a day is. But there is like a standard galactic day.
Yeah.
But then they also, other planets that are more on the rim and like out in wild space will have their own because of how far away they are from the Corellian
system. Well, I'm going to maybe be completely wrong, but I mean, circadian rhythms have everything to do with sunlight.
A lot to do with sunlight
that, you know, so if you're in space,
you could set your own
circadian rhythm
by light exposure.
By light exposure.
Yeah.
But then also, I mean, it's space, it's future. Who knows if they haven't figured out a way around some of that chemically, or maybe we've just changed as beings enough to a point where
they're all running around. There's also no relativity.
It's like a tiny clock that you swallow and it's ticking. Just it's like when you have a basket of puppies and you put a clock in with them, so it makes them feel like it's their mom's heartbeat, but like it's a pill you take. they don't get on that science.
There's no, you know, it's, I never thought about that before until you brought up. There's no consequences of traveling at relativistic speeds in Star Trek. They don't they don't like go on a 4-year voyage and come back 120 years later.
That's because they're traveling in subspace, right?
Yeah, they're traveling in warp speed, which gets rid of the
warp speed in hyperspace. Just gets rid of all the
relativistic things.
I like it when fiction has to deal with that.
But there has to be some relativistic impact to going in at impulse drive, which is still pretty fast.
Right, that's really fast, but it's sublight.
How do you feel about, you know, oh, it's National Waffle Day, or, oh, today is how every day on the calendar has a thing. How do you feel about that as a calendar guy?
I think it's great. I loved it. And I was always advocating at work for adding the weird days into the calendars. Yeah. Like that always got shot down. Because I would just say, there's a paracalendar. People are making up stuff and it's growing. And, you know, and they pointed out, rightly, I think, that some of that stuff is created by trade associations that are just trying to make a buck. And on the other hand, I can say, but so was Valentine's Day.
Like
they took a religious holiday and said, let's buy chocolates today.
Sell a lot of cards.
Calendar, we just bought this calendar that has paintings of fancy business cats, and it's the best. And every week at the bottom of all the days, it says like National Hot Tea Week.
Oh, nice.
National like Bacon and Week or
also,
whatever.
Yeah. See, and
Every single Tuesday is marked as Taco Tuesday. which seems to, I mean, why do you, if it's every Tuesday, I think we can just
mark it on there.
We can just say it's Tuesday.
Don't forget, Tuesdays are Taco Tuesday.
Yeah, you can save yourself some ink and write that once. It's all Tuesdays are Taco Tuesdays.
What I want to know is
my definition.
I want to know what professional trade organization is in charge of Talk Like a Pirate Day. I mean, why would you not put that on a calendar?
That's from the internet.
Fuck up your calendar. That was a thing that came up in the diversity calendar when I worked on it, was that technically speaking, Shabbat is a holiday every week.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's an important holiday. And when we were doing the print version of the calendar, we would just put Shabbat as the first, you know, Friday night, Saturday of the year, and say this recurs throughout the cycle. But we also made an online version of the calendar that we were selling to clients that included an uploadable chunk of data that you could put into people's Outlook calendars, which we had to do a lot of fudging around with Outlook because Outlook is a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
And people really don't want to have every day of their year blocked off with a diversity event.
Especially if you're like, I'm looking at a glance. Right? Do I have anything to say? Oh, it's blank. Oh, no, there's something. What is it?
Yeah, people. Yeah. So, but in that case, we talked back and forth about whether we would put Shabbat every Friday night or not. And some clients said, no, we don't want that. And so, and because it was just an Excel spreadsheet, we can take it out.
Is a diversity calendar is that like carbon offsets for white guilt?
I suppose you could look at it that way. I have always argued that diversity and inclusion efforts in the corporate world often start out that way. But if you involve people who are affected by this stuff in planning and promoting and furthering that cause, then it doesn't have to be white guilt.
The more obvious, goofy, heavy-handed stuff has to happen so that the real stuff can happen.
Yeah, I think so.
When I started at FFG, I think there were maybe 5 women. And out of the 75 people, and now the ratio is much better. I mean, I bet now it's probably, there's probably 25 or 30 women out of 120.
You're the first woman in the sales department.
I will always be the first woman in the sales department.
It is because women don't game, Molly. I don't know if you knew that, but to some degree,
it's because it was hard to find women that were in the field. The company started 17 years ago.
Right.
There were fewer women in the field. And the ones that were working more on video games than board games, because board games hadn't taken off yet. And so now that we've got this big board game boom, with anything, it gets popular. There's more jobs. More women want to do it because they're like, oh, I'll do that. Like, yeah.
I think one of the big challenges for us when I was working in the diversity field was pointing out the fact that your industry is changing. You're recognizing that your customer base is at least 51% women, or at least X percent African American, or whatever. You know, that the other big thing that had to happen was getting leadership to invest in hiring people of color, hiring women, and that's still something that I think is not going anywhere. Like
not fast enough.
Like, how of the 25 women that work in at FFG, how many are on the board of directors?
How many are managers?
That's not a really great example. But,
two.
Yeah, but that's movement. Yeah. See, and that's the other thing is that it's not just about white guilt. It's like, let's look at the numbers now and look at the numbers where they, you know, how they move over time. Yep. That actually matters to people. And I think that matters to the direction a company is going. But yeah, it's totally, a lot of places, it's totally white guilt.
Calendars are awesome.
One of my favorite, it's just always stick with me. In the Family Guy, they're sitting around for board game night, and Cleveland is brought over. It's like
the
game of racial equality.
And they're playing.
And they're playing, and it's frustrating, and it's like, well, how do you win? And he's like, well, you never win. You just do a little better each time. It's so perfect. Like, you don't win at racial equality. You just do a little better always. You just little efforts, little accomplishments.
So I have a question that I think, you know, John, as a theist and as a calendar expert, how do you feel about Sunday being the first day of the week?
Oh,
I'm not crazy about it, honestly.
Do you know where it came? Confusing. I mean, being a calendar nerd, why did Sunday be the first? I don't understand, because clearly I think it's religiously motivated, and yet Sunday is supposed to be the day of rest. It's the Sabbath day, which biblically is the last day,
and not like weekend bookends.
Yeah.
I think there are, and I'm going to speak from my own experience, and if there are listeners out there who know more about this, they'll write into you, and I'll get to dodge the bullets on that one. But my understanding is that it actually goes back to that Christ event, right? Because the Sabbath was always Saturday, or was always the last day of the week. And the resurrection happened, and it says this, and we could look it up in some of the Bibles. It says, you know, that they went to the tomb on the first day of the week. And so they go to the tomb on the first day of the week. Tomb's empty. Christ appears.
Yeah.
Then the point they're making there is the resurrection of Jesus resets the whole of creation.
Sure.
That's the theological argument, that the resurrection of Jesus changes the order of all of creation, and so the first day becomes the holy day for them. Some people would argue, you know, well, in the time, now that we're living in the time of Christ, isn't every day the holy day? And other people would say, you know, yes, but we ought to have at least one day carved out a week that we're going to observe.
My argument is iCal will let you set your calendar to be Monday through Sunday. So how I have it, because the weekend to me as a unit, it is 2 days and I don't have work.
My entire life, I've had an issue wrapping around the idea that Monday is the second day of the week.
I don't think I've ever like lost any time thinking about it. Like, I mean, the weekend is the goal, and the week is the thing that you get through to get to that goal. And then the last half of Sunday, you spend dreading the next 5 days. That's just, you know, how it goes. So we're going to move on to five questions.
Yay.
All right.
Five questions.
Five questions.
This has been a great conversation, though.
Absolutely has. Molly, do you want to start us off?
Yes. Question number one. What is the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days? It doesn't have to be new, just the best one you've seen.
In the last 30 days? What movies have I watched? I should have prepared for
this. Anything you watched over Christmas, thinking, or?
Yeah.
Netflix or on the theater or whatever.
Let's see. There's probably a tie. I watched Fight Club again, and I love that movie. It's so sexy and dangerous, and it's also kind of low rent, you know? So that's probably the best one that I watched in the last 30 days, which I've seen before.
Screw the Matrix, Fight Club rules!
There's people that are super, super hate on Fight Club. And I get it.
It's because Chuck Palahniuk is an asshole.
He is super asshole.
He's also very polarizing.
He is. He did a reading on my birthday some years ago, and I got my copy of Choke signed, and he wrote Happy Birthday in it and stuff. Nice. And like he did a reading, and man, like Choke is a fucked up book.
Yes, it is.
Like he is polarizing is a good way to put it.
That's a great word for it.
All right, question number two. Who's your favorite atheist character?
Elliot Arroway, without a doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Because I love that. And in my case, it's particularly her portrayal by Jodie Foster in Contact.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I love that moment when she goes through the wormhole or whatever, and the first words out of her mouth are, "They should have sent a poet." And you just want to go, "Oh, Ellie, they did."
Yeah.
They did send one. They sent a human who could see that there was more to it. I just love that. And I think,
"I know you're not my dad because I don't believe in that. Yeah. So what's going on?"
Like, I loved her portrayal. I thought it was really sensitive, and I really liked that, you know, here was a strong woman who stuck to her guns on a belief that could have cost her a career move. I mean, I just think it's a really interesting character.
It's a Sagan book, right?
I've
never read it.
The book's good.
I feel like a bad nerd.
The book spends a little more time focusing on that relationship between Ellie and the character, the theist character.
Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, the Matthew McConaughey character. And a little more time focusing on her beliefs.
Yeah.
The movie is a little less explicit.
Well, the movie's got to be a little less atheist to get people into seats, to be honest.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
I loved – that's one of those – Fight Club's one. Contact is one, and there's a few others where I feel that the movie is as good or better.
Yes,
than the book.
Fight Club is definitely
Fight Club's
a better
a great adaptation.
It's a better movie than the book. I really do feel that.
There's one or two things that are in the book that I wish were in the movie, like the Marla Singer's mom, the fat, the way they start getting the fat to make the soap, and that sort of thing. I feel like the movie. It would have fucked up the pacing. They wouldn't have been able to keep their gritty.
Yeah, because they jump right into stealing. There's no setup.
But I love that part in the book, and I feel it's important to the story, but the movie's a better movie without it.
Yeah,
so it's like I...
Yeah.
Yeah. Question number three, what is your geekiest hobby?
I change hobbies about every 18 months. That's probably my geekiest hobby, that I am a hobbyist.
A hobby nerd.
You collect hobbies.
Yeah, I do. And right now it's bread making. So
I'm making
sourdough bread from scratch.
You have your mother?
I do. I got the culture from Friends of Carl, which is this guy who used to send you, you would send him a self-addressed stamped envelope, and he would send you a little dried starter from his 1847 culture.
Oh, that's
awesome.
Oregon Trail culture, and you know, there's scientific arguments about whether or not it really goes all the way back to 1847.
Has your culture ever died of dysentery? I'm sorry.
On that note, question number four is, what is your favorite sandwich?
Well, I make my own bread, so I love to make a sandwich on my own bread. No, I think it's a toss-up between the Reuben.
King of sandwiches.
Such a good sandwich in that dark
Who came up with the Reuben? I love them.
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah,
I love that. And honestly, the Rachel is pretty good. You know,
Sure.
And the Reuben that they do at Ginger Hop in Northeast.
Oh, with the kimchi
instead of sauerkraut.
So
it opened my mind. So that was one.
Sriracha instead of Thousand Island, too, I think.
Yeah, that's right. It was, And then the banh mi. I love banh mi.
Yeah.
Banh mi.
I like that with mock duck.
I wish somebody would figure out a Reuben banh mi, but I'm not sure.
Huh. Maybe that's your calling, John.
Maybe
that's your calling.
It's hard to make
like that kind of a carrot-y vegetable salad type thing, but like pickle that.
With mint.
You could totally pickle that.
Oh, yeah, you could.
And then that's your base for the sauerkraut replacement.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm. And then hoisin sauce instead of
a mint hoisin Thousand Island.
That's really interesting.
Yeah,
we're onto something.
Somebody make that. Somebody figure it out. John, it's your job.
And then we would make us one.
John, it's your job. Now, the last question. This will be interesting. What's the stupidest thing anybody has ever said to you about, we'll say, your theism?
Yeah.
Since you're not.
Well, I did study up on this question because I was going to say the stupidest thing anybody said about my atheism is, why don't you have it? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. Really good. No, you know, I remember the first really big argument I had with an atheist in college, and it was a dude who had heard XTC's Dear God for the first time. He knew I was like a religion minor and came in, you know, it was one of those late night, let's have a couple beers and argue until 3 in the morning. And he was just obstinate about, I mean, look at this. How could you be into this kind of a thing? Look at what it says right here. Don't you think that's weird? And isn't the Bible completely made up? And I'm like, well, sure. I mean, it's no more or less made up than any of the other things that everybody agrees to. We've got a bunch of criminal people running the, show in so many religions. I just felt like that was one of those, like the young man, that really was the template or whatever of the young man angry about his discovery of atheism. And
like, that guy sounds like he's an angry at God atheist. Yeah. He's not quite an atheist because he still believes God's there. Yeah. He's just mad at him.
He's like, this God seems like a really dick. I hate him.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to believe in him because fuck him.
And I always
that'll show him.
Like, yeah.
That God is a real dick. I mean, I love. I love Nietzsche, and I love the idea that one of my professors at seminary, yes, I went to the seminary, had this idea that the death of Jesus on the cross was an act of self-defense against God by the human race. because God was so intent on being in a relationship with humanity, and the terms on which God wanted to have that relationship were so radical that we had to kill him.
That's crazy.
And I've always loved that image.
I like that.
I've always liked that image. Because there's a certain amount of truth to it. And it rings true. Like, of course we have to kill God. And if we're going to, and what we do after that is, what we do with the remains of it is the question for theologians, I think, to me.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like Preacher.
Absolutely. Yeah. Those, you know, a lot kill of those creatives.
First thing we have to do is kill God, and then we can have the religion conversation.
No, first thing we do is find God, then make him fucking explain what did you do, and then make him pay.
What's the name there was an English television series came out right before they relaunched Doctor Who, and it had Christopher Eccleston in it playing Jesus, the second coming of Jesus.
I gotta
look that up and put it in because it interestingly enough, the basic premise of that show, that series, it was like 2 or 3 episodes long.
Okay,
was the same idea of in order for the human race to advance, God has to die.
Yeah, and I think in some respects that's true, and that's probably why I'm part of the reason I didn't pursue seminary any further than
it would have been super.
It's really hard to explain that from the pulpit.
Yeah, sure,
really right. Hard to say that.
Our ideas are old and may not be necessary.
Good Friday. Today we kill God, and we need to.
Yeah, I had a friend in high school who had a really good joke about that. He's like, I didn't do anything. God's dead for 3 days.
It's like a Rumspringa.
Exactly. It is. It's a society culture-wide Rumspringa.
That's great. That's great. Well, thanks for joining us, John.
Thank you.
Is there anything you want to promote or pimp or send people towards?
I do have a thing. That's one of the reasons I begged to come on your show, partly because I'm a geek for calendars and you guys have an annual New Year show. And partly because I'm doing a show at the Bryant Lake Bowl, a one-man show in February, February 5th, 6th, 12th, and 13th. It's called The Insufferable Spiteness of Beaver. And it's a show about, it's a personal show. It's, you know, really autobiographical storytelling kind of thing that uses stories about animals as a lens to look at my own life.
Awesome.
And there's a lot of sex and death in it. So that's, I think that would cross over with your audience as well.
you know them.
There's some there's some jokes that are really upsetting, I think, for people that I'm looking forward to telling.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
For the culture. So, yeah, check out the Bryant Lake Bowl.
The insufferable spiteness of beaver at the Bryant Lake Bowl in February.
Yeah. Definitely. Excellent. There will be a link in the show notes.
Yes.
Well, that'd be great.
Absolutely. So check that out, you guys, if you're local, Bryant Lake Bowl. We're Geeks Without God. You can find us on iTunes if you didn't already. Please leave us a rating there if you have a moment. If you want to comment about calendars or anything we've talked about today, feel free to leave a comment either at geekswithoutgod.com or on our Facebook page. We try to respond to the stuff people post there. Otherwise, we will see you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Hey, Molly, you hear about the thief who stole a calendar?
No.
You got 12 months.
Boo. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. We're geeks. We're geeks without God. We're geeks. Geeks without God.
But, that's the problem with having the pre-conversation. It never makes it into the actual conversation.
Doesn't it?